of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Thursday, September 14. Here are some of the stories we are covering. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres expresses sadness over the tragedies in Libya and Morocco.
These heart-wrenching disasters have claimed thousands of lives and affected countless families and communities. The United Nations is mobilizing to support relief efforts.
Morocco is slow to accept aid following last week's earthquake. The DRC sentences politician Jean-Marc Cabon to 7 years for allegedly insulting the president. We'll also discuss the plight of DRC opposition ahead of the December election. Malawi extends polio vaccination to 15-year-olds. Ugandan police ban opposition rallies.
The mobilization activity was used to incite violence, promote sectarianism, make illegitimate calls for the removal of an elected government.
And Kenya hosts the regional healthcare exhibition. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has expressed sadness over the tragedies in Libya and Morocco. Authorities in Morocco reported Wednesday that the death toll from the earthquake had reached 2,946 and thousands more injured. Meanwhile, the death toll from flooding in the eastern Libyan city of Derna was reported Wednesday to be more than 5,000 and expected to rise further. Speaking to reporters Wednesday ahead of the next week's UN General Assembly, Secretary General Guterres said the UN is mobilizing to support relief efforts in the two countries.
Allow me to begin with the very sad news and tragic developments in North Africa. I want to express my deepest condolences and my full solidarity with all those affected by the devastating earthquake in Morocco and the massive floods in Libya. These heart-wrenching disasters have claimed thousands of lives and affected countless families and communities. The United Nations is mobilizing to support relief efforts, and we will work in any and every way we can with partners to help get emergency assistance to those who so desperately need it. In recent days, I've attended a number of gatherings of various groupings of world leaders. In Nairobi, to focus on climate solutions in Africa. In Jakarta, to strengthen our partnership with Southeast Asian nations. In New Delhi, for a summit of G20 leaders. And tomorrow in Havana, to meet with leaders of the G77 and China. But next week begins the greatest G of all, the G193, the high-level week of the General Assembly. It is a one-of-a-kind moment each year for leaders from every corner of the globe to not only assess the state of the world, but to act for the common good. And action is what the world needs now. We will be gathering at a time when humanity faces huge challenges, from the worsening climate emergency to escalating conflicts, the global cost of living crisis, soaring inequalities, and dramatic technological disruptions. And people are looking to their leaders for a way out of this mess. Yet, in the face of all this and more, geopolitical divisions are undermining our capacity to respond. A multipolar world is emerging. And multipolarity can be a factor of equilibrium, but it can also lead to escalating tensions, fragmentation, and worse. So to bring our multipolar world together, we need strong, reformed multilateral institutions anchored in the United Nations Charter and international law.
That was UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres speaking to reporters Wednesday in New York. Rescue and aid groups continue to struggle to reach the area's hardest hit in Morocco's earthquake, which has killed nearly 3,000 people. There are questions, however, about how the government in Rabat has responded to international aid offers. Noura Hefayet in Tunis has more.
Moroccan families continue to sleep in the streets in areas hit hardest by last week's earthquake. Aid is gradually rushing the remote mountain communities buried in the rubble. Mohamed Aswali, Red Crescent Operations Coordinator, explains the search and rescue efforts.
The role is providing primary therapeutic services in any place,
keeping up with the level of psychological support and also keeping up with finding blood, because the needs are many for the wounded and the affected. About 450,000 volunteers have been recruited across the country, and they are finding supplies for survivors.
As soon as news of Friday's earthquake spread, offers for help came from all over the world. So far, the government has accepted offers from just four countries, which it said were friendly: Spain, Qatar, Britain, and the United Arab Emirates. There have been questions about why Morocco was so slow to accept other offers, including those from the United States, Tunisia, Turkey, Taiwan, and Algeria. Voice of America asked a spokesperson for the Moroccan government why it has not so far accepted other aid offers. The spokesperson did not respond. Mohamed Boudin, head of the Atlas Center for Analysis of Political and Institutional Indicators in Rabat, says Morocco's government has been assessing its needs before accepting aid.
As for the foreign aid offers, Morocco has accepted only four countries at this stage as part of its assessment of the needs, which required rescue and search teams, equipment, and searching for survivors under the rubble. And in the coming stages, Morocco may be in need of assistance from other countries as part of ongoing assessment of the needs related to managing the repercussions of the earthquake.
The government has said it did not want a flood of aid groups causing confusion and bottlenecks in the rescue and recovery efforts. However, some regional analysts say diplomatic and political issues may also be involved. For Voice of America Africa, I am Noura Hafid in Tunis, Tunisia.
In Uganda, the police have banned the mobilization campaigns of opposition leader Robert Chakulayi, also known as Bobi Wine. The police accuse him of uttering sectarian statements and issuing defamatory statements against President Yoweri Museveni. Reporter Mugumi Davis Rakariji has more from Kampala.
The police ban was issued to Uganda's largest opposition party, the National Unity Platform, on Wednesday. The police accused opposition leader Robert Chagulanyi, popularly known as Bobi Wine, of not adhering to police guidelines, resulting in unnecessary traffic jams and accidents and the loss of lives and property. Fred Enanga is a spokesperson for the Uganda Police Force.
In Kasana Luwero district, the mobilization activity was used to incite violence, promote sectarianism, make illegitimate calls for the removal of an elected government, and issuance of defamatory statements against the person of His Excellency, the President of the Republic of Uganda.
Joel Senyon, the spokesperson of the National Unity Platform, denies his party is involved in any wrongdoing. He challenged the police to take the party leaders to court.
When Duera told them, look, you guys worked so hard, lost everything to bring this regime into power, but you're so impoverished. That's why there must be change, okay? I've also seen them saying, we have attacked the person of the president. Look, these guys came with nothing. That's the reality. All they had was the clothes on their backs. Now they have amassed so much wealth by looting taxpayers' money over the years.
This month, Bobi Wine embarked on a mobilization campaign for his party by traversing Uganda. Senyonyi says his party will continue to mobilize for party support both within and outside the country.
So these Ugandans in these different countries, they normally invite us. We go and connect with them. And so that's why we said, let's pause phase number one, finish the Canada Convention. When we return, we are going to have phase number two, and we shall write notifying the police. We are not going to stop. Those who think we shall be threatened to stop, no, because whatever we are doing is well within the law.
The police say they have robust plans to uphold the rule of law and cannot look on as the country is beset by unrest. For VOA Africa, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinj in Kampala.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Thursday, September 14. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. A In the Democratic Republic of Congo, the lawyer for Jean-Marc Cabon says his seven-year sentence in prison is excessive. Cabon, once the vice president of the DRC National Assembly, was sentenced Wednesday by the country's highest court for allegedly insulting the head of state and institutions of the republic. The sentence comes as the DRC prepares for presidential elections on December 20th, in which President Felix Tshisekedi is seeking re-election. While announcing the formation of his own political party in 2022, Cabon criticized what he called the absence of a clear vision in the DRC. Lawyer Gisley Mwangi tells me the seven-year sentence was given to Cabon to guarantee that President Tshisekedi can run for a second term without competition.
For Mr. Cabon and his political family, we think that is excessive condemnation, very excessive. It's a condemnation just to satisfy any autocratic regime subordinately seeking a second term without balanced competition. With a persecuted press, we take note of this unfair sentence, the author of which no one suspects is Mr. Tshisekedi. This stage for Mr. Cabon will pass. We think that is a time, is just a time in our country. But Mr. Cabon thinks that this time will pass.
Are you suggesting that the sentencing and the verdict may have something to do with the elections coming in December?
Yes, the sentence is just to mistake Mr. Cabon to make his candidate to presidential election.
But according to the court, Mr. Cabon insulted the president.
The Court of Cassation rendered an unfair judgment, condemning the honorable deputy to a sentence of 7 years of penal servitude, while the maximum penalty for the offense of contempt is just a 2 years maximum. That is a very excessive condemnation.
As I was saying, the allegations are that Mr. Cabon insulted the president. What exactly did Mr. Cabon say?
Mr. Cabon said just a three. He says that our country has gone wrong. Mr. Tshisekedi is not democratic president. There are many things. All Mr. Cabon say is just a three about Tshisekedi regime. Tshisekedi regime is not a rights regime. There are not freedom of press. You know, in Kinshasa, they arrested many press politics. Mr. Tapmo Kalunda, Mr. Boujakera Sani, Cheribel, they is killed. There are many, many efforts in our country, justice or security, that prove that Mr. Tshisekedi is not a democratic president.
Can you appeal the decision of the Court of Cassation?
No, it's not possible because the Cassation Court judged at first and last resort. He has no possibility of appealing.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you too.
Gisli Mwangi is the lawyer for Jean-Marc Cabon of the Democratic Republic of Congo. He was speaking with us from the capital, Kinshasa. Still in the Democratic Republic of Congo, formal campaigning for the country's December 20 elections begins on November 19. Last month, Human Rights Watch accused the authorities of targeting leaders of the opposition political parties, restricting their fundamental liberties, and arresting party officials. The U.S. Embassy in Kinshasa has also urged the government to use all the means necessary to ensure an even playing field for all candidates. Jean-Paul Ruhosha is the executive director of Congo Today, a local organization that advocates for peace and reconciliation in the DRC. VOA's Douglas Umpuga reached him to find out whether the government in Kinshasa is prepared for the election.
I really don't think so. The reason I don't think so is because they don't have material yet. I have been too close to people who are in CENI, which Commission of Election in Kinshasa. They are not ready, and even the calendar is not out yet for the country to be in election. Second, the security in the country. The whole country is not secured, and I don't think the country will be able to do fair election. Therefore, it will be complicated for the country to organize the election at this time.
Last month, Human Rights Watch accused the authorities in the DR Congo of targeting leaders of the opposition political parties and restricting their fundamental liberties and arresting some party officials. Even the U.S. Embassy in Kinshasa is urging the government to use all means necessary to ensure an even playing field for all candidates. How does that one affect the preparations for the election?
Of course, they are doing that because they want to intimidate the opposition, because they don't want the opposition to put pressure on the government to organize the election. That's why they are doing what they are doing. The U.S. Embassy has been advocating for that all the time, UN and all other people. But of course, the government, it doesn't want to organize that. And of course, that will affect the election heavily, because you cannot put the candidate like Martin Fayulu, Moise Katumbi, and all other people to intimidate them so that they cannot be in the election. That will affect completely the election. It could not be organized the way it should be.
Other analysts have pointed out the insecurity in Eastern DR Congo. Is it possible, in your opinion, to organize a general election and a presidential election when part of the country is affected by insecurity?
That's the theory of the government. Actually, that should be the reason to do the election, because the government we have now, they are not able to secure the country. Therefore, it will be very necessary for that to happen. But again, the Constitution of Congo says that you cannot organize the election if one part of the country is in a war. But this is not the same case. There is no any region that is captured by the group of rebels or something. No.
That was Jean-Paul Ruhosha, Executive Director of Congo Today. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Washington, D.C. Malawi is extending the maximum age of children eligible for the polio vaccination from 5 to 15 since the discovery last year of its first polio case 30 years after the country eradicated the disease. The number of cases has increased to 5 this year, the latest victim being 14 years old. Lamek Masina in Blantyre explains what some experts say is driving the resurgence of the illness.
Malawi health authorities made the announcement Tuesday at the launch of the nationwide polio vaccination campaign that is targeting about 9.7 million children. Beston Chisamire is the Secretary of Health in Malawi. He said this time the children will be vaccinated on their doorsteps.
So our health workers will be visiting the parents' homes and we vaccinate them. We are aware that some of them were skipped in the previous vaccination campaigns, but want to try it and reach to the majority.
Chisamire said the maximum age of children to be vaccinated has been extended from 5 to 15 years of age after the discovery of another case this year of a 14-year-old child. Malawi confirmed its first polio case in February of last year, 30 years after it eradicated the disease. Malawi is among several countries in Africa that have registered confirmed cases of polio in recent years. The World Health Organization said in a statement released on August 30 that 187 confirmed cases of circulating variant polio virus have been reported in 21 countries in the African region. The World Health Organization says that although the region has been certified free of world poliovirus, it is witnessing a resurgence of the disease because of a decline in immunization coverage and the disruption of essential health services caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. UNICEF, WHO, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and other partners of the Global Polio Eradication Initiative are leading the vaccination campaign in Malawi. UNICEF representative in Malawi, Shadrack Omo, says the United Nations Children's Agency so far has procured and distributed 10.2 million doses of the polio vaccine across all 29 districts and 865 health facilities in Malawi. Omo also says UNICEF has installed 250 new refrigerators, repaired 125 existing ones, and distributed essential cold storage equipment. health authorities in Malawi have noted with concern, though, that some parents refuse to have their children vaccinated because of cultural and religious beliefs. Authorities say this will impede efforts to meet vaccination targets on schedule. George Jobe is the executive director of the Malawi Health Equity Network. He told VOA that his organization has been educating people about the importance of vaccinating children against polio.
We still maintain our free and health education to those who don't believe in medication, that they should be mindful of a right to good health of their children.
Polio is a viral disease that causes irreversible paralysis and has no cure. The disease can be prevented, however, by the administration of effective vaccines. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta, Malawi.
Research is key when it comes to offering healthcare services in East Africa. Regional healthcare experts are in Nairobi for 3 days discussing fundamental issues that affect the healthcare sector. Maureen Ojiambo tells us about the work of Medic East Africa, the largest healthcare platform and medical laboratory market in the region.
Medic East Africa is working to shape the healthcare industry in a sustainable way. The 3-day event includes more than 5,000 delegates, among them government officials, healthcare professionals, and investors from across the globe, to debate the latest healthcare and lab innovations that could redefine healthcare delivery in East Africa. Speaking in Nairobi during the opening of the event, the exhibition director for Informal Markets, Tom Coleman, said that the event is providing an ideal platform for the East African healthcare industry to build relationships with stakeholders from around the world.
Kenya is the healthcare hub for the East Africa region. And what we see over the next few years is potential growth working with our partners, Ministry of Health, Kenyan Health Federation, and also AMREF. There is a huge bounce back. You've seen a lot of international presence here, a lot of investment, but also a lot of local manufacturing companies now really presenting, you know, some high technology. One of the major issues that we have here as well is public health and also the supply chain. And I think working with our partners, especially the Ministry of Health.
The conference will also address crucial issues and identify solutions for challenges facing the health sector. Experts say public-private partnerships are key to the challenges that are facing healthcare in Africa. Coleman says health stakeholders will be able to determine the best course of action to deliver quality healthcare across East Africa.
This is very different to any other event that happens in the region. There's no other event that brings some of the biggest bellwether clients in the world, like Siemens, Mindray, United Imaging, but also we have international pavilions. So we have an international pavilion from Germany, from China, from Korea, from India, from Pakistan, something that other events, you know, aren't really showcasing at the moment. Huge opportunity with some of the companies that have never been to Kenya and never been to the East Africa region.
The United Nations say Africa has got a higher disease burden globally, with the continent facing a shortage of healthcare workers. The Kenya Medical Association, KMA, says both private and public hospitals need to do a thorough disease research. Simon Kigundu is the president of the Kenya Medical Association.
We as a country do need to do research on a lot of the illnesses that we have, and we have seen that local research actually does bring local data, which has on several occasions actually changed like management of some diseases.
Regional and international experts are expected to share insights and best practices on healthcare excellency, public health and equity to address the challenges facing public and private healthcare. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Sacramento, California.
And that's it for this Thursday, September 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Botting, Washington, saying, have a great day, and please be safe, whatever you do.